CityTalk 105.9 official podcasts. Online at citytalk.fm. Downtown Liverpool in business with Frank McKenna. CityTalk 105.9.
Hello and welcome to City Talk's Business with me, Frank McKenna. I'm the chairman of the Independent Private Sector Lobby Group and Business Networking Club, Downtown Liverpool in Business, and every Sunday I'll be taking a look at some of the week's big business stories and talking to some key personalities, decision makers and entrepreneurs who work in and influence Liverpool and the wider northwest region. This week we'll be talking Liverpool, Liverpool One, its impact on our great city and the city's plans for the future. Shanghai Expo's coming up. We've got a brand new waterfront that is looking absolutely spectacular at the moment. And the new Lime Street Gateway opened this week as well. So we'll be talking about that with the MD of LiveSmart, David Wade-Smith, and the Downtown Liverpool Events Manager, Roger Jonas, who will also be looking forward to the Liverpool Business Awards, Business Oscars, that take place in July. This week, I've also been talking to the Chief Executive of Manchester City Council, Sir Howard Bernstein. And obviously, he's had some interesting things to say, not only about his own city, but about Liverpool too. First of all, let's talk Liverpool. Let's talk about the fantastic improvements that we've seen, the regeneration around the city, the impact it's having with the sun shining. The feel-good factor is back, despite all the economic doom and gloom. And two chaps in the studio who obviously... looking forward to the future with some optimism. David, come to you first. You've had an awful lot to do with Liverpool's tourism in the past. You're still involved in that side of the city in terms of the LiveSmart offer. What's your take on where Liverpool is at the moment as a city?
Yeah, the momentum just keeps going, doesn't it? For all those naysayers that said after 2008 that, you know, where's the legacy and where's the momentum going to come from? Well, I think we're proving through 2010 and looking forward to next year that things keep going. I mean, this week's seen many interesting developments as you've outlined, and another that I'd like to add to the list, so to speak, was the announcements in the middle of the week about Shanghai and the World Expo that Liverpool is featuring very strongly in, and that's probably one of the most exciting things for even the history of the city, to be participating in such a prestigious event in such a very important country. China continues to boom. They've just released figures that say that their gross domestic product lifted by a further 11%, which is a massive, massive number in the current climate. And although it's good for China, it's also good for the rest of the world as well. And for Liverpool to be participating in that event, for taking businesses out to China throughout the course of the next 5 or 6 months or so, is very positive for the city.
Absolutely. It's been a bit of a slow burner though, Roger, hasn't it, Shanghai, in terms of capturing the imagination of Liverpool and the business community?
I think people have questioned it. I think a lot of people have questioned it because they haven't necessarily understood the benefits and the values of Liverpool having having exposure in Shanghai. What's it going to do for the city? I suppose that's understandable because it's new. Mm. You know, something on this scale. You said a while ago, David. I mean, we held an event with Dr. Kerry Brown, who was fronting the Shanghai deal to begin with, wasn't it? And David presented, and Kerry Brown presented, and made it very clear to the business community, I thought, who were there, what it was all about, down to the amount of money that it was going to cost, which I think at the time was about 4 million. And you made a comment, David, about the fact that 4 million, you can't even build a roundabout for that, which I thought was really poignant.
I'm talking of a major motorway junction, by the way, not a mini roundabout. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
The costs of infrastructure are high, but they're not that high.
I did say that at the time, absolutely.
Yeah, and it probably cost a lot more than 4 million now. So I think the investment is incredible. But again, as you say, a slow burner. And I don't know if there's anybody, one agency to blame for that. I just think it's the reservation from the business community as to what the values and the benefits are. And people make their own minds up as well. I mean, we were just talking, they're talking 70 million people passing through. And You know, one of the criticisms was a lot of those are going to be school children. Well, you know, if that's the case, as I say, what a future market to be targeting. If there aren't going to be a lot of school children, then great. But I think that's going to be a small percentage. And I think in terms of our relationship with Shanghai and the relationship that we've had for many years, isn't it, really, as a partner, a strategic partner.
Twin City,
yeah. Of course. I think the opportunities are superb.
I think that one of the reasons why it was a slow burner was obviously because we were right in the middle of an economic downturn. I think people were inevitably paying attention to their own businesses rather than looking at potential marketing opportunities for the future. Fortunately, I think Liverpool has performed well during this economic recession. And I think that people are now starting to identify that unique opportunity that we have. You know, I mentioned that I was in Manchester earlier this week talking to Sir Howard Bernstein. Now, if we didn't have the Expo and Manchester did, we would be screaming and shouting about what a missed opportunity. Yeah. And it seems to me that, you know, that the few people that are out there now that are yet to be convinced that this is going to be a positive thing for the city, really, they're never happy. You know, you could almost pave the streets with gold and you would still get people complaining and moaning. Yeah, and they talk about the millions we're spending. Yeah. But what you've got to look at is the multi-millions in return that potentially we can get out of this exposure.
There'll be plenty of cities who will, as we've been used to in the past, saying, why aren't we doing that? And there'll be plenty of cities across the UK that will be saying exactly that same thing to their own leaders. But China and Shanghai, they put a great deal of emphasis on what they call face. And face is all about being there, looking people in the eye. And I think part of the returns that the city will see, because this, after all, is an investment for the city, is that in years to come, the people of China and the people of Shanghai will remember that Liverpool was there. Mm-hmm. It's a very important year for China as a nation. Economically, World Expo is recognised as the equivalent of the Business Olympics. So they've spent many billions of pounds in Shanghai preparing for this event. They've developed hundreds of acres of land. I think
it's almost like a micro city, isn't it?
Yeah,
from what I can see,
some frightening statistics. Mm-hmm. They've built underground stations. Mm-hmm. They've built overground stations. They've put a terrific amount of infrastructure. I think they've built the equivalent of 3 Mersey tunnels under the main river between the expo event space and the main city itself. So it's a huge amount of investment. Mm. And Liverpool are a part of that.
Yeah.
That will be remembered. And whether it's children or whether it's adults that are visiting, they will remember Liverpool as a friend, as a potential investor in the country. Yeah. And that will be worth a lot to us.
I was with Neil Sturmey from Grant Thornton as well earlier this week. They're one of the 50 sponsors that I think the Shanghai Expo has now attracted from the private sector. And he was saying that he's actually going over to Shanghai in September and was telling me that Grant Thornton have got an office over there. But he sees it very much as a great opportunity of showcasing what Grant Thornton have got to offer and obviously getting some benefits for the company and the business, yes. But equally, the proud association that Grant Thornton have with Liverpool and the ability to be able to give something back. And I think that's a great sense, you know, there is a great sense of we're all in this together, the people who are involved, to make sure that it does actually work for Liverpool.
But I think, again, you look at the spotlight has been very much on Liverpool over the last 3-4 years, hasn't it? And we keep going back to 08, which is a massive focus for Liverpool. And, you know, hopefully other core cities will be looking at this afterwards and saying, what you've just said, David, why weren't we part of this?
Yeah.
You know, finally, has Liverpool become that forward thinker?
Yeah.
And there is a sense of pride, because I think Liverpool's capacity to deliver as a core city and as a business community that has engaged more recently has done so much more for the profile. But I think also you've got to take into account the logistics of putting something like this together, referring back to what you say about the slow burn. You know, this is an event, and Liverpool is an element of a bigger picture, isn't it? and the logistics and all the agencies that have been involved in bringing this together, including bringing in the likes of sponsors, the calibre of the likes of Grant Thornton.
Yeah, yeah.
How do you sell something like this that is so new to a big company like Grant Thornton? And again, it's the likes of Neil Sturmey realising what the value, the benefits. Mm. He might already have a relationship over there with an office. But, you know, the agencies that are out there trying to promote this and engaging the business community. Because at the end of the day, it's all about the money, isn't it? It's all about
sponsorship. It's got to be a return.
Yeah, of course.
You know, they're not doing it for the... Yeah, as I say, it's nice that there's that spin-off benefit that you're being seen to support the city. Yeah. But in the end, there's got to be some real financial benefits.
Yeah.
It's difficult to measure as well.
But again, I think from the point where it was announced that Liverpool was going to Shanghai, that's the point when people started to demand questions, yeah. Demand answers to questions. And that's the wrong time. You've got to allow the organisers. And I know this as much as anybody, because you're a nightmare at this, Frank. Frank's, we're going to do this, and then all of a sudden, you're not really, I'm joking. But at the end of the day, you've got to give the people who are planning all the elements and the strategy, the infrastructure of something on this scale, time to develop it and explore what is required.
Yeah.
Great decision to go there in the first place. Fantastic decision. Now let them get on with it.
Yeah.
And I think that might be one of the reasons why we have probably seen it as a bit of a slow burner. Mm. It's the swan, isn't it? The serene swan and the paddling legs under the...
Although, I'd take us back to 2008, and let's face it, in the lead up to that, we all thought this could go horribly wrong. And it was only 2007. And the sort of back end of 2007 that we really pulled things together. And I think similarly with Shanghai, timing-wise wasn't great because of the economic situation that we faced. And then I think the other side of the coin was that we had, again, people within the agencies perhaps not working as fast as we have come to expect in the private sector.
Yeah.
But that's the way public sector works and operates.
It's unique, isn't it? We've certainly never done this before as a city, and not many UK cities the past few years have engaged in the World Expo process. It's an exhibition designed to for the host city to show what they're good at. I mean, those people that know their history, the UK has held World Expos. I think the last one we held was just after the Second World War, when, again, it was an opportunity to show...
Did you go, David?
I didn't make it that time, no. No, I was still a twinkle in my father's eye, as they say around here. But previously, the one that's most famous is the one in Crystal Palace, where they built the Crystal Palace at the turn of the century. Yeah. And it's a great opportunity to show how confident you are as a nation. And it's also an opportunity for those cities that engage and other countries that engage to also show their confidence to engage in that whole process.
Mm.
And I think the timing, for a city like Liverpool that's probably been more famous for our talk the last 20 years ago, the last 20 years or so, but now it's an opportunity to walk the walk, so to speak, and to be there.
You spoke about legacy, David, of 08, and there is a newfound confidence in Liverpool. We certainly believe that the city has progressed, modernised, moved forward. I was at an event on Monday evening, over in Manchester, and I was surprised talking to a couple of people in that room. It was a guy from Birmingham, somebody from Manchester itself, actually, who was saying, Liverpool's had a really bad time through the recession. And I said, well, actually, the opposite has been the case. We feel as though we've done really well. And again, it comes back to this perception outside of Liverpool about where we are. The fact that Liverpool knows and feels better about itself doesn't necessarily mean that feeling is being transferred to other parts of the UK. And for me, that is still a problem.
Yeah, yeah. Just goes to show there's a lot to do. I don't think there's any opportunity at all to rest on our laurels and to say, it's sorted, everything's going to be fine. I think it's as I'd like to think locally, we've had a decent start to the 21st century. If you go back 100 years, you could probably say the same then and look what happened for the rest of the century, so to speak. But no, I think it's interesting to hear the opinions from outside. Again, it depends who you speak to. If you speak to the arts world and the culture world, who have been a lot closer to activities and their own newsletters and their own press show Liverpool in a different light, then that's one aspect. Perhaps you're talking about the business community where that message hasn't yet got out. Mm. Perhaps when General Motors were having the difficulties they were having a year ago, the spotlight was on Ellesmere Port, which was, again, close association with Liverpool and Merseyside. Ford, likewise, with the sale of Land Rover Jaguar to Tata a year or so ago, and then the scrutiny put under the manufacturing capacity of that organisation. They were only just announced that it's likely they're not going to close any of the three plants, neither the two in the Midlands or their most successful and most productive plant, which is here in Hale Wood. So some of those rather negative aspects sometimes are easy to point to.
But I think there is just an inevitable feel that if we're in recession, then Liverpool must be struggling, which, you know, is something that I think we need to address. And I remember having a conversation a few years ago with the city leadership about how we were promoting ourselves within the UK. And I was told in no uncertain fashion that we weren't concerned about the rest of the UK. We wanted to get Liverpool's brand into the international market. Now, I can well understand and appreciate why we want to do that, but I think it's got to be a dual approach. I think there's got to be a combination of marketing outside of the UK, but I do think it's important that we start to project and promote this more positive Liverpool to the rest of our own country, because, as I say, in the end, you know, if people in Manchester, Birmingham, and more importantly, London, still perceive Liverpool as a struggling city, then that's not doing us any favours, is it?
No, what you're driving at here is how effectively we're marketing Liverpool and Liverpool City Region. I think without a doubt, there's a lot more to be done.
Are we doing the same thing here, though? Are we expecting too much too soon? I mean, it's 2010... And again, the agencies that are responsible for that, have we given them enough time? I don't know what the answer is to that.
I think so. But we've got a great message now. You just need to. I mean, we've got the luxury of being at the top of the Radio City Tower here, when you look out, you can see all the fantastic developments that have taken place and been completed, and you can see the many others that are still in progress. And there's a fantastic message. You could say with total confidence now that Liverpool is a superb place to
visit. But Liverpool as a city is still a work in progress, isn't it?
But we can afford to get a really confident message out about a come to Liverpool, visit Liverpool, which is obviously a tourism aspect. But you know, it's well said that great places to visit are always great places to live and to work and invest. And I think we could be, if that's what you're driving at, Frank, and certainly I think it's worth emphasising that there's a lot more to do locally to spread the word and get the message out about Liverpool. And there is some activity. There's, I pick up the Sunday papers and there's the odd half-page ad. Which is all well and good, but when you're trying to shift a multi-billion-pound economy, then throwing £250,000 at it is simply not enough.
Yeah, I mean, I want to see, you know, our leaders, civic and business, in London more often. I want to see us taking the Liverpool message into the city and being more aggressive about what we've got to offer here. And likewise, I think we need to start to do more in terms of getting people into Liverpool, because once they've been here, once you can see, feel, taste, touch the change, the regeneration, the reinvigoration of our city, then it's very difficult for you then to go back with a negative taste, a negative message about what you've experienced. But I do think that we've almost got a group of people who have looked at 08 and said, wasn't that a fantastic year? Then jump forward to Shanghai, which again, very, very important strategically that we do that. But in between, we've got to recognise that in the UK itself, Liverpool's image and the perception of our city is still not great. And for me, that needs to be a priority over the next period.
Yeah, I definitely don't disagree with that, Frank. I think it's all well and good to say we've done a lot over the last few years. We've come a long way. But I certainly subscribe to the point of view that there's always a lot more you can do and can be doing. Mm. And Liverpool, maybe the opportunities just heading our way. There's not just general election coming up, but there's local elections. Mm. Maybe that will present the city with an opportunity to revisit how we're marketing the city and the city region, and with a view to doing things better.
Yeah, I mean, on a positive note, this week the unemployment figures announced, and again, Liverpool City Region jobless total down, which is not necessarily in keeping with some other parts of the country. So again, we're bucking the trend. But are we shouting enough about that?
I think that's the thing. You've said it. We're booking the trend, but people don't know about it. Mm. And we have got a legacy in terms of the perception, the outside perception, that Liverpool is not necessarily a safe city. I have a theory that you'll find trouble in Liverpool if you go and look for it. I've lived here 20 years. I've never seen, and I've seen a few little brawls at the end of the night, and that was mostly girls. But... You know, when you live in a city, you see it for what it is. Mm. And I think Liverpool is an extremely safe city.
Let's just stick on that safe city thing, because, again, this is something that David and I in particular have talked about in the past, and the New York experience and how fantastic New York transformed itself from being seen as a haven for crime to all of a sudden a place where everybody wanted to go. I don't know if you've picked this up, David, but they've experienced somewhat of a crime wave over the last 12 months or so, and they're starting to get really concerned that it's going to start to impact on their tourist and visitor numbers again. I think, you know, the reason I point this up is that I do think on occasions, cities, no matter how great they are, whatever the history, whatever the tradition and the transformations they go through, if you sit on your laurels, there's always the problem that it will start to reverse itself. Those improvements will start to actually be mitigated against. I mean, I think murders in New York over the last 12 months have increased by something like 250%. I mean, it really is serious stuff.
I've picked up on that. And one of the simple facts is they have significantly reduced the number of police officers in New York, having invested so much in crime reduction, and I think a consequence of that is taking some pressure off the national debt, which the USA have got a problem of the scale that the UK has got, if that's a consequence of all the work we've done as a city, and the city's I know for a fact picked up a few trophies and awards in terms of the Safe Cities agenda, we've been very successful at that, but it does clearly point out that the more officers there are on the street, the lower the crime rate.
Visibility is very important, isn't it? I mean, I know we called for zero tolerance in the city centre a few years ago, and I met with some of the senior police officers, and they basically said, that's what we've got. Mm. And I think when you look at the figures in terms of the crime rate, some of the superb results that we can boast, we are one of the safest cities in the UK now. Yeah. But we can't rest on our laurels. And again, you know, going back to that dinner last week, people around the table that I was sat were surprised when I was able to quote the statistics about how good we are in relation to low crime rates, people coming in to visit, not only feeling safe, but being safe. Mm. And, you know, this nonsense about you get your car nicked every time you come into town. You know, again, I think we're one of the lowest car theft statistics in the country now. But we've got to really project that more positive image, I think. And as I say, we've got to continue to do it and continue to work hard, because if New York can start to go backwards, then any city can. Just looking at some of the other regeneration projects that are starting to come to fruition, David, you mentioned that you've been up to see the gateway at Lime Street. It's looking impressive.
Yeah, earlier this week it's officially reopened. I don't know by now whether they've cleared all the barriers away, but it is looking superb. And that the monstrosity that was whatever the experiment was in the 1950s and 60s has finally
We'll
been,
be getting lots of phone calls and texts and emails in saying that was a fantastic piece of architecture, but I tend to agree with you. I thought it was a carbuncle that needed to be torn down.
And there's a public artwork again carrying the culture theme forward, but in amongst the within the public realm area, there's an art installation. I think the artist it represents a journey between Liverpool, England, and Liverpool, Nova Scotia. So the artist Simon Faithful was speaking in the city during the week as well. So again, keeping the legacy going and building some interest into what looks like another piece of superb public realm work.
Mm. The waterfront also is looking great, isn't it? Now, the arena aside, again, looking beyond that, the museum, when's that going to be ready?
It's about 12 months away.
12 months off.
I think they're fitting out now. I mean, the building looks complete as you approach it, but go back to my...
I actually like that, do you?
Yeah, I think
it fits.
Love it.
You know, again, a lot of people weren't sure. There was a lot of controversy about the design.
The other buildings next to the black glass-fronted building, I mean, they look sensational.
Yeah,
and
really
my concern
like
was that it was gonna spoil the look of the Three Graces. But it hasn't. I think
compliments.
It's massive.
I was down at the waterfront just a few days ago with a colleague from Leeds, who's a senior partner at one of the property companies in Leeds, and they were absolutely blown away with the look and feel of the waterfront with the canal. They couldn't believe the specification of the canal. The woodwork and the stonework and masonry work, some traditional skills. And it's all superb quality, as if it's built to last.
I think that for me, the next stage down there would be to do some sandblasting and clean the buildings up, because I think they do look a bit grimy now and grubby.
Port of Liverpool's scruffy. Looking good.
It's had a facelift, hasn't it?
Again, locally owned. And a huge amount of pride in the building.
Yeah.
There's a new Asian restaurant open.
Yeah, we were talking about that earlier, weren't we? It looks very impressive. Yeah, it looks very. And of course, that's on the terminal, isn't it?
Which is the again, 20, 30 years ago, we'd have probably settled for a porter cabin, or someone would have put a porter cabin. You need a new ticket office on the waterfront. Yeah. I will put a couple of.
Is that Mersey Travel?
Yes, it is. Superb piece of work. Yeah. Again, probably the texts and phone calls, it's a subjective thing, is architecture, but it almost looks like a sort of baby brother of the new museum that's gone up.
Let's just say something about Mersey Travel as well, David, because I know you're really well connected and you work closely with those guys on the Live Smart card. We went to Aintree for a couple of days last week, and I have to say, it's the first time I've actually ventured onto the train, being the public transport snob that I am. But Roger convinced me that it would be a great experience. And the amount of people that they move in the short period of time that they do it, and the great atmosphere that's created, and it's part and parcel of what Mersey Travel do now. They've got that absolutely boxed off first class. And I have to say, I meant to say it last week, but I have to say, what a great, great operation that is.
Yeah. I mean, I've got to agree with you. I'm a regular user of the rail network in and around Liverpool and out to the Wirral. And Mersey Rail, to get the sort of terminology correct. Mersey Travel was a fantastic, almost visionary plan to give Mersey Rail a 25-year franchise, which was long enough. Unlike the national franchises, which is often 5, 7. Or only 9 years, is they've got 25-year franchise that allowed them to invest in the network, and over the last probably 5 years or so, we've seen a transformation in the efficiency. The people that run the network and the staff. it's a good morning here, and when you're buying a ticket, the service is superb. And,
it's a good news, yep, good
unless
news
you
story.
Unless you like putting your feet on the seats, in which case they've yeah. taken a very strict policy, yeah. which I think those of us that use the network regularly, we actually appreciate. How they're running things.
So they should, as I say, another good news story for the city, and be looking at even more good news stories for Liverpool after this break.
Downtown Liverpool in business with Frank McKenna, City Talk 105.9.
Well, this week we're celebrating the sunshine, we're celebrating all things great in Liverpool. I've been joined in the studio by David Wade-Smith of LiveSmart, Roger Jonas, the events manager at Downtown Liverpool, and I'm delighted that on the phone now is Guy Butler from Grosvenor Developments, who, of course, were the catalyst behind the fantastic Liverpool One development. Welcome, Guy.
Hello, Frank.
And I believe Liverpool One have had some fantastic results despite the economic downturn that we've been experiencing.
That's right. We've been trading now for our first full year since we've been open, and the trading results came in and incredibly good. We've shown growth practically month on month. And I think one thing it's no surprise for us, because shopping centres such as Liverpool One don't mature until about year five. So we're expected to carry on for the next few years, to be honest.
I mean, it's just been such a spectacular success, hasn't it? And as I say, nobody could have anticipated the economic downturn. Why do you think Liverpool One has managed to hit the ground running, if you like, and not being as adversely affected as some other retail units across the country?
Well, as you'd expect, my job is to go and look at competitors as well. And I was in Bristol on Tuesday looking at Cabot Circus, which was a scheme opened the same year as Liverpool One. And the streets were empty. And you go into Liverpool One and the streets are absolutely jam-packed. And it was a lunchtime in Cabot Circus. And I was asking a colleague exactly that question. How come we've been so successful and they haven't? And I think it's due to location. I think we are absolutely at the heart of Liverpool. People have no excuse to come into the centre and they can't avoid Liverpool One. That amongst many other things, of course. But I think the location, we are at the centre of Liverpool.
And in terms of unit take-up, I think you're at 96% occupancy now, aren't you?
That's right. It comes and goes, to be honest. You'll find that, and it'll happen now forever, for as long as Liverpool One exists, that there'll be a change almost on a weekly basis with shops, because some retailers decide to move around and others, new ones come in and other ones go. So it chops and changes, but it sits around 96%.
It's interesting when you talk about location, Guy, because obviously for a number of years, Liverpool did lose an awful lot of that retail traffic. What's been the trick of winning those people back, getting that custom back into Liverpool city centre?
It's very difficult, to be honest, because there's a lot of things that go into play with that. Marketing is important, reputation of the city. But it didn't take very much to make Liverpool One a success. We only had to change, the greatest impact to any adjoining scheme or city was 5%. So we haven't had to change or take away a lot of trade from other people. We just had to stop people leaving the centre of Liverpool to go and spend the money in the traffic centre and Cheshire Oaks and so on.
I think the other impressive thing, as far as I'm concerned, we were just talking actually about Liverpool's improvement around issues such as crime and disorder. The other great thing about Liverpool One is how clean the place is. You know, it's pristine, isn't it, in terms of its presentation?
Well, we've done a lot of customer surveys to look at what people actually want, and the results came back. And I think the lowest score was 95% satisfaction on things like cleanliness. So we worked very hard. We have a very well-trained team there. And Chris Bliss and his team, I'm pretty much handed the development now over to Chris Bliss, who runs it on a day-to-day basis. But Chris has got a very good team there, and they're firing on all cylinders.
Now, just in terms of the rest of the city, I mean, again, I have to congratulate you in terms of the way in which you've enabled the dock to be reconnected to the city centre. It's far more accessible now than it once was. I also think it's fantastic to have a Hilton Hotel in the city, and they're doing a great job. But beyond that, there is some concern, isn't there, that the likes of the Bold Streets of this world have not necessarily been immune from losing trade and losing custom. Are there plans within the city, and indeed are Grosvenor involved in those plans, to see if we can actually keep those visitor numbers here, keep those shoppers here, and get them to look at the independent retail sector as well as coming into what is a fantastic offer at Liverpool One?
I'd argue with you there, Frank, on that one, because I think Bull Street is better than it was when I arrived in Liverpool in 2002. And if you look at the Italian Fish Club, I think, or the Italian Club at the top of Bull Street, absolutely fantastic offer and far better than we saw, you know, 10 years ago in the city. So I would argue on that. But then again, I agree with your sentiment to your question. We've only announced this week a new deal to bring a new Premier Inn into the city, 186 beds going on Hanover Street. But it's a slowly job. You need to take one step at a time, and Rome wasn't built in a day. So that's the bit of news we got this week, that Premier Inn are coming in. We should have more news about the rest of the Hanover Street site leading up into the rope walks. And we are here, you know, we've taken a bit of a hit financially, as you know, on Liverpool One, but we're committed. And One Park West is now well over half full. We've got about 40 flats left in One Park West. And we've seen that during a recession. We've sold those flats during a recession, and the Hilton goes from strength to strength. So I agree it needs somebody looking at it all the time, and I think we need... And you talk about this a lot. We need proactive assistance from the city council as well, and I think that's going to be an interesting point after the election.
You touched there on residential units. How are you starting to see an improvement in terms of shifting some of those?
We've been flabbergasted, because I took on the job of selling the flats in One Park West, you know, at the sort of the base of the recession in 2007, 2008, and I thought we're really going to struggle, you know, in terms of taking that forward from the very earliest days of the recession. And we've seen a fantastic take up, and we're selling about one a week at the moment at very good prices, in a very good location. So we've been sensible on pricing, been sensible on what we offer, and the building is kept, like Liverpool One, to a very high standard of cleanliness, and the management team work very hard to make sure that people have the best experience possible. So we've not dropped our standards, and I think that's what's really important during a recession, is that you don't drop your standards.
And the Hilton Hotel's booming, isn't it?
It is indeed, and you know, there's a good management team running the Hilton. They're committed to Liverpool, and it's another premium offer for the city. It's really important that we get these premium offers as well as the high street offers and the budget offer.
Now, Guy, what's this mini Grand Prix initiative that you've started to lead?
Well, it was a bit of a mad idea I had. I'm a car nut, and this is a personal thing largely, which we're organising. In 2002, they drove Formula One cars up Regent Street in London, and I've always thought that would be a good thing to do in Liverpool, and I was waiting for somebody else to do it, and no one did do it. So together with the Chumley Pageant of Power team, they organise a big event, a bit like the Goodwood Festival of Speed every year down in Cheshire. I thought we'd try and close the Strand and run racing cars and Formula One cars and touring cars up and down the Strand. So on the 25th of May in the evening, the Strand closed at 6 o'clock, and for an hour and a half, 2 hours from 7 o'clock, we've got everything from £1 million Bugatti Veyron through to £1 million Ferrari Enzo, Maserati Birdcage, so lots of very interesting and exciting cars. We'll have the Breitling wing walkers in the air, we'll have helicopters, and in the docks we've got jet skis and powerboats and hovercraft. So for an hour and a half we're going to have some petrol fun, power fun down on the Strand.
That's going to be 90 minutes that's far more entertaining than those Leeds debates that we've had to suffer through over the last couple of weeks, I can tell you. What a superb initiative, Guy, and again a testimony to how much Liverpool's come on and progressed.
Frank, as well, so it's important to know that there's no, you know, it's all for not for profit, and it's help for heroes, the charity we're supporting.
Oh, fantastic, fantastic, fantastic. Listen, Guy, we're going to leave it there, but thanks very much for joining us today.
I appreciate the call, Frank,
and we'll speak to you soon.
Thank you very much.
Cheers, Guy.
Bye.
Well, that was Guy Butler from Grosvenor with some very exciting news about some activity and initiatives that are taking place down there at Liverpool One from May. Sounds fantastic. I mentioned in my introduction that earlier this week I was over in Manchester speaking to Sir Howard Bernstein, the chief executive of Manchester City Council, widely regarded as one of the most successful civic entrepreneurs in the country. This is what Howard had to say. Obviously, Howard, you've been in charge of the city now in partnership with your political masters for how long is it? 20 years now?
Not as chief executive since 98.
98?
Before that, I led the task force on rebuilding the city centre in the aftermath of the bomb.
Now, Manchester's transformation during that period has been absolutely incredible. I mean, I don't think anybody argues with the point now that it's certainly the premier city in the North West, and I think genuinely accepted now as the second city in the UK. What do you think were the main ingredients of taking Manchester from, let's face it, somewhere that had suffered through the industrial changes that were taking place through the 70s and 80s to the modernised city that we see today?
I think the sort of economic base of Manchester 20 years ago or more was very one-dimensional. It was therefore very vulnerable to changes in the marketplace, national as well as international, and the key requirement was to diversify that economic base as quickly as possible. And I think we've seen, therefore, over the past 10 years or more, very significant progress made. We still have, yes, a significant manufacturing centre, but now you see commercial, professional services, media, culture related activities, a lot of activity around research, knowledge base and science. And those, I think, are very, very important requirements to drive our economic performance. Equally, we've invested in culture, we've invested in sport. Our visitor infrastructure, I think, is now of the highest quality. We are now a destination centre as well in our own right, which is delivering outcomes, which is equivalent to most international cities. So when you put all of that together with a very strong retail offer, I think Manchester has become a much more comprehensive all-round city. Still a lot to do in meeting the challenges going forward, particularly around worklessness, skills, education, and equipping our labour force with the skills they need going forward. But certainly we're on a stronger platform today than we've been, I think, for generations.
Mm. Now, of course, in Liverpool, we had Capital of Culture in 2008, which has given the city a real boost. Here in Manchester, we had the Commonwealth Games. Did that give us a significant platform on which to build? Has there been a legacy from the Games, or was the Commonwealth Games just part of an awful lot of things that were happening around Manchester's regeneration?
The Commonwealth Games was a major world sports event, one of the top multi-sports events we've had in this country. You don't build for 2 weeks in the year 2002. What we always did was focus our energies around what was the relationship between what we needed to deliver for the Commonwealth Games and our long-term regeneration plan. There are many examples of other places around the world who've hosted similar events where the facilities have hardly been used since the Games have taken place. That couldn't be Manchester's agenda. Otherwise, we're just contributing to decay and dereliction going forward. So, of course, the most obvious manifestation of our legacy programme is Sport City. The way we built the stadium for the Games, we reconfigured it to support the location of the football club going forward, the way we built up incrementally the range of sports facilities around there, building now a new BMX centre alongside the velodrome, the access to the community enjoys to all of those facilities, and also the way in which the football club, through the partnership agreement which was signed several weeks ago, has placed itself at the heart of the community and how it wishes to play the fullest role working with the council in achieving wider regeneration ambitions. So it is a long journey. The sorts of ambitions we have around East Manchester are not capable of being delivered overnight, but I think anyone would say, if you look at East Manchester in the mid-90s and you look at where we are 10, 15 years later, I think the transformation has been remarkable. Just a few facts to underpin that. Last year, the number of completed housing units in East Manchester was just over 500, which is only 100 or so less than what we were enjoying in the boom years. So again, evidence of real confidence, not only in the market, but also amongst people who want to live in East Manchester. And also some of the biggest office deals that have been done in the Northwest, indeed outside London, were done in Central Park. Something like 400,000 or 500,000 square feet of new offices is now currently under construction for the police, new police headquarters, and that will give us new impetus for change.
And clearly the city centre, as you say, totally transformed, and the city looks as though it's set for the next 20 years. I mean, some of the long-term plans that are in place now, including the regeneration of East Manchester, as you've mentioned. Where do you think Manchester sits as far as the northwest region and indeed the north is concerned?
I think the economic importance of Manchester, Greater Manchester, to the whole of the north of England is undeniable. The contribution we made to economic performance is immeasurable to the north of England. That's not to say, of course, that places like Liverpool, Leeds, elsewhere in the north of England are not important. Of course they are. And it's very important to the northwest in particular that Liverpool achieves its full potential too. And I know the work that's being done there, which gives everyone confidence that can happen. But at the end of the day, if we are talking about engines of economic growth and national recovery, then the role Manchester has to play in that process is going to be pivotal. That's why we've invested so much effort working with the government over the last 12 months or so on the pilot city region, invested so much effort working with our colleagues in Greater Manchester to readdress and renew our governance arrangements. We need to assume more responsibility for prioritising investment, for coordinated transport economic development and planning and housing policies. We need to actually create a platform for greater levels of devolution. All the political parties are talking about that now. I think we've captured that agenda very effectively and can demonstrate how, by working together in partnership, we can make a real difference. And at the same time, the public sector reform agenda is going to come even larger, I think, in the minds of everybody over the coming months, not just because of the need for us to respond to public sector spending restrictions, which are inevitable over the next few years, but because people are rightly demanding better outcomes for the money that's being spent. And we've got to look very carefully about how we work with employment services, health, how we work with to improve skills, how we actually create a stronger spatial focus on how public services are delivered to ensure they meet the needs of people who live in and outside of Manchester.
You mentioned the city region structure there. I'm always banging on over in Liverpool and indeed Lancashire about how cooperative the authorities in Greater Manchester seem to be, how much cooperation there is, working together, partnership arrangements. How difficult has that been to achieve, to bring all those different local authorities together and then set out an agenda that clearly has common objectives?
It's not been a straightforward process, nor has it been a quick one. You know, AGMA, the Association of Greater Manchester Authorities, have been working consistently together now for over 20 years. And their whole approach to change has been a very important part of how we move forward as a city and how individual authorities see themselves going forward. For us, we recognise that if we are going to achieve our ambitions around being more economically competitive, then all our policies around economic development need to be joined up. That means, how do we support the definition and penetration of our labour market? How do we actually support and improve transport in priority areas? How do we actually create a spatial planning policy that supports the marketplace in terms of where it wants to see investment in new facilities? So all of those things have got to be driven on the basis that, you know, the marketplace doesn't respect administrative boundaries, it respects the market. And what we've been doing in Greater Manchester and made rapid strides over, I think, the last couple of years, is really drive that agenda.
And on that basis, in terms of collaboration, do you think there's a case for greater collaboration between Manchester and Liverpool?
Of course there is. Indeed, I was with Colin and colleagues from Liverpool only the other day, and you know, we have to work very closely with Liverpool, particularly around some key public sector reform priorities, because we face similar problems. We might all be at different stages of development, but the inherent problems around skills, worklessness, transport, labour market are all the same ones. And we also need to work Manchester with Leeds and West Yorkshire, parts of Lancashire in particular, who increasingly, if we are successful in creating the sort of city we want to do, people from those areas will increasingly look to Manchester for their jobs going forward. Mm. And therefore, how we create an accessible labour market to Manchester is going to be an important requirement over the next 10 years.
Now, I was at a CBI dinner towards the end of last year, and a Businessman of the Year award was the top prize. And I think some people in the room were rather surprised that it went to somebody from the public sector, namely yourself. But I do think that demonstrated the civic entrepreneurship that has helped to drive Manchester to the place it's at now. Mm. How important has it been for you to develop those strong links with the private sector, and how easy is it for a public authority to actually engage positively with the business community?
I see it as an essential part of my job. It's not just the private sector, it's all our partners. I don't see myself as the chief executive of the City Council. I see myself as one of a number of people who have a responsibility for leading Manchester the place. So therefore, whether that is communities, whether it's private sector, third sector, all organisations who have an interest in the social and economic development of the city are therefore all people which me and my colleagues want to work with to improve Manchester the place. And I think over the last few years, particularly given the difficult financial and economic times we've been coming through as a nation, well, the world, global crisis as we know, leadership is more important than ever. You know, being a good leader in when everything's hunky-dory is probably not the hardest job in the world. Exercising leadership and direction when we have real choices to make about how we invest our money, about how we engage our partners, how we support people to adapt to the changing economic climate within which we're having to work, involves serious leadership, and also not forgetting the requirement to continue to plan for the next wave of investment going forward. And we've spent as much time in Manchester over the last 2 years planning our next phases of development, the new co-op quarter, which is now starting to take shape. We're going to be a big investor there. The way we've intervened in different major regeneration initiatives to maintain momentum going forward, announcements around new house building in North Manchester through creative arrangements with Red Row, the house builder, the way in which we're driven the creation of a new civic quarter, where we're not just renewing the civic estate, we're creating a new platform for, I believe, what will become a £1 billion package of private investment, new commercial development, stretching from almost St Peter's Square all the way back to Manchester Central.
So Howard Bernstein, thank you very much.
Well, that was Howard Bernstein speaking to me earlier in the week, and Manchester obviously doing very well, chaps. But David, the future's bright, the future's Liverpool.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. As long as we get the message out there and shout about it. We've got plenty to shout about. Let's raise the bar.
And Roger, quick plug for the Business Awards.
The Business Awards, 22nd of July at the Palm House. Go to www.downtowninbusiness. You can register your nominations for who's going to win one of the many awards that we'll be giving out on Thursday, the 22nd of July, at the Liverpool Business Awards.
Marvellous. In association with City Talk 105.9, among others. Well, that's it from me, Frank McKenna, and City Talk's Business. Thanks to my guests, Sir Howard Bernstein, Guy Butler, David Wade-Smith and Roger Jonas. Thank you for listening. Have a great week. And don't do anything I wouldn't do.
Downtown Liverpool in Business with Frank McKenna. City Talk 105.9. City Talk 105.9. Official podcasts. Online at citytalk.fm.